call the meeting to order, the March meeting of the Highway First Golf Facilities. Roll call, I believe. Do we have everybody here? Oh, you're the governor.
Rose said she was not gonna make it.
Rule of the minutes from the previous meeting, did everyone receive those from the February 8th?
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Frederick, second by Supervisor Kalinsky to approve the minutes of the 8th of February. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Well, I think I probably did all my chairman comments talking about the woods and the logging and things, so we'll move on. Any committee members? Any other supervisors here? No, you the governors aren't here. Citizens' comments. Any citizen that would wish to address the committee would have 5 minutes to speak. Seeing no citizens here, citizens' comments are closed. So we'll move right into the golf division.
Well, we've been working on our business plan and working the business plan. We did organize all of our leagues at Petrifying Springs and Brightondale, and we were able to free up a couple spots. We did sign up, I believe, 2 new evening leagues for Petrifying Springs and 1 afternoon league just today, and then we did sign up a new Brightondale league too, so that's been very positive. Last weekend we attended this, or 2 weeks ago, 26th through the 28th, we attended the Chicago Golf Show. It was a great reception, a lot of very positive comments, a lot of, oh, I love your course, oh, you know, that's my favorite course. We actually gave out 3,000 coupons while we were there, so which is about a third more than we gave out last year. So that was tremendous, and hopefully we get some outings out of that. Next weekend we're going to go to the Milwaukee Golf Show, and we have 8,000 coupons printed for that one, so we're looking forward to another good show there. As far as our, we've been going through all of our websites, we've been combing our email database. We have over 19,000 people in our database now. We're getting sign-ups at the golf shows for increasing our database. So when we finally get the green light from Rich Heinisch and Lori Stanek that they feel that the grounds are ready to open, we'll be sending out an email database, our email blast on that. We'll be putting it in the press release out in all the local newspapers and get everybody to know that the golf courses are open. We're thinking possibly Friday or Saturday, you know, depending on how the weather is. And it'll be wet. We might be walking only. We might be limited to maybe 9 holes at each golf course, but at least we're going to get open, and we'll be selling memberships and that type of thing for the season. The projects that we're working on, the ash tree removal project, like I said, they just got all the trees, tops chipped. They had most of all the logs removed from our parking lot. We're going to kind of gather those up tomorrow morning. John said that we'll get some help from the parks and get those as isolated as possible. We've asked the highway department to come and help use their brush that on the front of the tractor and sweep all the parking lots so that we can get all the wood chips and everything cleaned up, and hopefully by this weekend we'll be able to open and have a pretty clean parking lot. There is still a lot of cleanup out on the golf course. I mean, we've been burning and there's a lot of stumps that are going to be needing to be cleaned up. Right now, we were very fortunate at Petrifying Springs that we had the trees go down in the snow, and we were able to use the bucket tractor and scoop all the branches up and pile it on top of the stumps and then burn it that way. We weren't as fortunate over at Brightondale, and it's going to be a lot more work. I mean, we had 3 guys work, all week long, and they cleaned the roadside on 11 and 12 on Highway 75, just hand raking, So we did purchase a new rake today, and hopefully that'll speed things along a little bit. But there's There's some damage out there from, you know, when they had to go out and get the trees and logs in the cooler weather that we're going to have to fix up. And there's a lot of, you know, exploded branches, I'll say, just because it's when they fall, they just explode and go all over the place. So a lot of cleanup there. The deep well, we went out with bid specs. We're going to have the opening of the bids tomorrow. We had four vendors at the meeting, at the pre-bid meeting, so hopefully we'll have a good price coming in from four different vendors there. I think all quality vendors, so I'm looking forward to that. So that should be getting on the way. Tomorrow morning also we're having a pre-construction meeting with Midwest Irrigation. So we'll be getting together with them and they're going to start mobilizing and staging all of the pipe and their equipment. Actually, they did already today. They brought some stuff, but they're going to be mobilizing all their pipe and everything next week. And then hopefully, you know, in the following week, we'll be getting going and starting to put the new pipe in on the blue spruce out at Brightondale. We did purchase 65 new carts. We are, I don't know exactly when they're going to be arriving. They are bringing back some older carts just for us to use because we didn't quite get the order in until the end of January and they're not built as of yet. So we might get some of our carts from last year in for like 40 of them for getting going over at Petrifying Springs. And then when they deliver the new ones, they'll pick up those old ones again for us. But we'll end up with 144 carts at Brightondale and 64 at Petrifying Springs, 64 new carts there. So we have 208 in our fleet. And then, the off season's been very good. It's been very good as far as booking outings and leagues. You know, the clubhouses are looking phenomenal, and the new lighting project, in all the clubhouse changing over to LEDs really, really makes it look sharp. We got new ceiling fans and light fixtures in Petrifying Springs, which has always been really dark in the dining room, and it's brightened up. And I'm very excited to see how our guests receive, you know, what we've done in the clubhouses. So things are good.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions?
Yes, Jim. And Dan, I don't know if it's for you or Jim. If we compiled the financials for the golf division from last year, yeah.
Yes, it's not audited though.
When do you expect that?
Well, gosh, the auditors don't come in for a while, till May. Is there something specific?
Nope, just want to see. Are we the black or the red?
Yes.
Okay,
black.
And what is the... What are we intending to do with the profit from the golf division? Is it to keep it or is it to put it in the general fund?
Have you been? Well, right now it's going to stay in the golf fund until we receive direction on what they're going to do with it. I don't really know.
All right. Do you have a ballpark idea what how much we were in the black?
More than last year.
Okay. So we'll see something in May then.
I always hate to quote these numbers, but it's more than any other year since I've been here in 5 years.
Great. It's not a bad thing. Just would like to see the hard numbers. Okay, so May.
And I wouldn't say that unless I had a pretty good idea that
you want to
it's,
the but audience
it's definitely another year in the black, definitely.
Okay. Thanks, Jeremy. Anything else for Dan? All right, we'll move on. Ray, you're going to do Mike is on vacation.
Mike's on vacation. So just hitting a couple of high points. PSV ramp going down into the garage, that heating project that was completed, I believe, on Friday, and they've got just a couple loose ends to tie up that they should have tied up this week. But that project went very smooth, will result in some energy savings, and was just a really good project. The pretrial building is the only other item I'm going to hit. The crack in the basement has been sealed. We're waiting for a third insulation quote, so we can fix up some of the missing insulation we identified when we did our audit of the building. We're going to regrade the exterior landscaping when the weather permits, where the water was leaking down into that crack in the basement. Working on getting an estimate and specs for caulking repair of the exterior. So that was one of the things we identified when we did the flyer out of the whole building, is that, if you remember the pictures, Well, we're now working through getting specs developed and cost estimate to actually reseal all of the precast panels and repair some of those, if you remember, the spalled out cracks up on the corners. Hoping I'm going to have that. It'll be in March that we'll have that information. And then, depending on what we find out, if you remember, we put $75,000 as a placeholder, not knowing what was going to happen when we did that structural analysis. We put that in the budget. We've only used maybe $8,000 of that so far for testing and other things and these minor repairs that we identified. So we got, I'm thinking, somewhere in the $65,000 plus range of money left in that. I'm hoping that's going to be enough to do that whole resealing and caulking. It may not be. If we find out that it's not, we will make an attempt to do a carryover. My gut's telling me it's probably going to be somewhere between $80,000 and $100,000 to do that process. But we'll find out in the next few weeks. We'll have it before the next meeting. That's pretty much it as far as the key points of what was going on in facilities and projects Mike's been running.
And those were all ongoing projects that Mike has reported on. Any questions? Okay, Frank, we'll move on.
Mr. Chairman, the KCC Highway Garage Roof Replacement Project, that was a big one, over 100,000 square feet. We wanted to make sure we got the bids out good and early so that we had a lot of bidders. We had 15 bidders show up at the meeting. We really got the word out and we were really happy. We had 9 people actually bid it, and the winning bid was Carlson Racine Roofing, and they came in with the contingency we had in there at just under $308,000, which was we were hoping for aggressive pricing and we got it. So we had a very good spec. We actually just talked to them, and they're going to go through the whole process of purchasing, getting the bonds, insurance, things like that. So we were very happy with the pricing.
All right, so the committee knows that, I don't know if anyone would remember, but our estimates on that were close to $600,000.
Correct. Altogether, it was close to $600,000.
And we're $250,000 to $300,000 below. And the main concern here is qualifying these people, because that was a huge discrepancy. So right now, they're in the qualifying stage of that bid.
They had a choice, and one of the choices was Firestone Roofing, very well respected, and they had to be certified to install Firestone Roofing, and we specified one other company, and it escapes me right now, but Carlson is certified by Firestone to install this type of roofing, so that's part of the certification you talked about. We had, really, there was a wide range of estimates. It went all the way up to $618,000. And so there was a very big spread, but, you know, depending on, you know, they had freedom of their means and methods, and a little bit we gave them leeway as far as when they would do it, so people could slide it into when they had an opening. And it worked out for us, worked out well. Right. And the key was getting out early, and Jim Kupfer and Ray really helped with that whole process. Moving on to the fire alarm system. Replacement project. The big one is the courthouse. That bid was pretty big and involved. We had to go through, we were looking at some other aspects of the bid, so we had to kind of sort through that. So we're hoping to finalize it yet this week. We fell a little bit behind on it, but we expect to get it back out on the street before the 18th. It is so involved, the whole courthouse has to be upgraded to a voice system instead of just the strobes and the blaring horns. So all the wiring, everything's got to be done. It's going to be a year-long project. But that's the new code by the state of Wisconsin. It's not our choice. This is by the state of Wisconsin code. It's got to be done. The PSB generator replacement, we've run into a few challenges with that. We actually are monitoring the load that is connected to that generator right now so that we know for sure what loads that generator has to cover in an emergency. The current generator is in a very small room and it does not meet current electrical codes. as far as the distances between panels and walls. So once we figure, once we have a good handle on the loads, you know, we wanted to look into maybe upsizing that generator a little, looking for the future. But once we get the loads, we'll be able to determine the size, and we might have to get a little creative with that space to meet the current electrical codes. That's it.
Any questions for
Frank? Frank, there's a 50% difference between the highest bid and the bid we accept. Do you have any reservations on, you know, the old adage, you get what you pay for?
Yeah, we, at first it was a little, when I added up all the bids, the average was just under $345,000. So we had the next couple people were $344,000, and we had $352,000.
We had enough in that 300 range.
Yes, okay. we had a few more in 300 range.
There were a couple flyers in there that you know, that were, well, like you said, over 600 grand.
You ever get a quote in your rough?
Correct, and that was the key piece that Dennis talked about, that they're certified for this roofing materials that they're using. We actually, because of the pricing, we called them up with the consultant and went through all the details that we had specified in this bid to make sure they clearly understood what they did. In fact, he actually came out here today and walked the whole roof, make sure that his numbers were right, square footages were right, and he's confident. He's done work for the county before.
Okay.
So, but yes, a very good question. We walked through all of those points of the bid to make sure he had it covered, his numbers.
Great. Thank you, Mr.
You're welcome.
Just to piggyback on that, so did the bid spec call for Firestone type roofing or its equivalent?
It was Firestone, and it's not Firestone, and it escapes me right now. It's Firestone and not Carlson.
Goodyear.
No, not Goodyear.
Bridgestone.
No, sorry.
Don't look.
And now I'm embarrassed. I can't remember, but there's
Michelin.
They had two good choices, Michelin. They had good choices that people have been around a long time and proven performance-wise. They had to be certified in either or, so it gave them a choice.
So it's just further evidence that the bidding process, being low, at least comparatively, did not dumb down the material or the quality that we're expecting, and maintain its original integrity for the material being used.
Correct. And it, like I said, the key was getting it out in the street very early, that even some of the guys that said, you know what, you're going to get some real aggressive pricing from some people that have the openings, especially before school starts, because school starts, that's usually those guys are booked for school, so they're looking to fill in those slots before that.
Just to follow up on the generator, do we have any particular time constraints we have to follow to have this generator resolved, or where are we at with that?
Well, we're hoping to get the, once we get the draws this Thursday, we'll be able to work backwards in the sizing, and then with the space we have, we'll figure out the space. What kind of drove this is the original generator from the early 80s, and the parts availability is getting tougher and tougher. So it's something we want to take care of, and that we put it in the first part of the year, but for right now, it's running.
Give the community a little insight. If you drive around the back of the PSB, the northwest corner of the building comes to a triangle point like this, that's where it's in. It's in that corner. You'll see the louvers there, and it's literally, it would appear, based on what Frank and I talked about, that they probably put that thing in and finished building the room around it and some of the stuff in there. It's going to be a challenge to get it, but we've got to get it done, because then we've got to get to the job center. So we want to get this thing done as quickly as we can. I think that we'll have the specs, like Frank's saying, and I'm thinking probably it'll take us into April to get the specs actually developed. But going into May, we should be able to get this thing out on the street and then get it done this summer. And we've got another project at the job center we got to get to, so.
And we may end up having to do the same thing. We have to tear that down and build around something new. That's It's that simple. Right now, we're legal. We have a generator that'll work.
Yep.
But we can't fit a new one in there, basically.
We came up with some creative ideas. There are some options to remotely mount the radiator assembly, which would cut off, you know, at least 2 feet out of the front. And so that may give us enough.
Right.
But that's really, it depends on the load that we've got that's really going to back us into the size of the generator.
Right. Good deal. Is that what you have there, Frank?
Yep.
All right. Mr. Sisson?
I've got a progress report on some of the projects we've been working on. In next year, in 2017, we're replacing the Pike River Bridge on Highway E, which is about a half mile west of Highway 31. Plans are pretty much complete. We're just starting to purchase right away for that project. We have some strips of land adjacent to the bridge and the bridge approaches that we need to purchase from the adjacent property owners, so we're working on that right now. The Highway S and N intersection project, which will be under construction this summer, there also we just really have one parcel of land that we need to purchase, and we're just beginning that right-of-way negotiation process this week on that project. So that should move forward on schedule. The Highway S reconstruction project, that's scheduled for 2019. That's the expansion and reconstruction of Highway S between H and 31. Just today I found out we had applied for an additional allocation of federal funds, and I just found out today we're receiving another $1.2 million for that project, so we're up to about $5.2 million in federal funds on that project, and I'm hoping to get at least one, if not two, more allocations before the 2019 construction. So every little bit helps on a large project like that. We conducted a public informational meeting on two of the multi-use path projects we're proposing to build, the one on Highway E from the existing county bike trail to Sheridan Road, and the path that we're going to build along Highway 31 from Highway A to KR. We conducted both of those meetings concurrently. I'd say maybe 10 people showed up or so. Not a lot of interest. All people that lived adjacent to the highway there, that were the paths coming through, and nothing negative. They're concerned if it was going to impact their landscaping and whether they'd have to plow it and that type of thing. You know, the usual concerns with multi-use paths. So that overall went well. This Thursday, we're having another public informational meeting on the proposed multi-use path on Highway C in Pleasant Prairie. That meeting will be at the Village of Pleasant Prairie Municipal Building from 5 till 7 on Thursday. Likely to be a little bit more concern from the local residents, just because there's probably a little more impact I shouldn't say there's more impact. There's more density to the residential area there, so likely be more people that are concerned. I've been kind of providing some guidance and assistance to the Village of Summers they need to replace their Pike River Bridge on 13th Avenue, and I just found out recently that they were successful in obtaining the federal funds to replace that bridge. So I'll continue to kind of provide them some guidance. We're not doing engineering for them or right away or anything, but just kind of guide them through the process of projects when they involve federal funds. So it's just something I like to try to help the local municipalities when I can. So that that looks like it's will successfully move forward, and I'll let the village make any further announcements about that. A couple other odds and ends. On March 1st, DNR will no longer be picking up dead deer along county highways. We're going to be responsible now. They will only pick up dead deer on state trunk highways. So, not a real big thing. I think we've been averaging about 193 deer pickups a year. That includes state and county highways. That's what they've been averaging. But I would think that probably a majority of those are on state roads. So, anyways, we have to pick them up now. We're just gonna for the time being do it ourselves, bury them at the at our Wilmot pit, and we'll adjust accordingly if it just gets to be something that we're not able to handle, but for now that's what we're going to be doing. Salt usage this year, as of right now for this winter season, we're at about 5,300 tons. An average winter season is about 6,400 tons, so we're about 1,100 tons below our seasonal average, and I doubt that we'll use 1,100 tons for the rest of this season. Even if we do get more snow, it takes considerably less amount of salt this time of year with the warmer temperatures and the sunshine. So looks like hopefully we'll end up a little bit below average for salt usage this year.
I don't know why I was thinking this, although it was more with kind of fellow mortals, the animal, circus animal center where they bring the retired animals in Walworth County. They were picking up deer, and they were feeding them to these, the lions and the tigers and stuff. Didn't we ever, at one point, did they do that here in Coles County?
I believe that at one point the contract that the DNR had was with somebody that provided that service.
It was with them.
Yeah.
That's
and
what it was.
Yeah. And we can do that. I mean, we could hire somebody to the same person that the DNR has, we could hire them to come and do it too, but it's kind of expensive, and yeah. I think it would be less expensive for us to do it ourselves, at least to try it. If it doesn't work out, we'll look at alternatives, but let's give it a try first and see how it goes.
That's why they were spraying them. No, people ever saw that. So people would take the eyes, they'd spray them with orange paint.
Oh, okay.
And they were going to the, I'm trying to think, I know right where the place is, but they've got
the Circus
retired,
World Museum?
They've got retired lions and tigers.
Oh.
And they take them in there and throw it under his feet.
Yeah, the first thing the DNR would like us to do is to just pull them off to the side of the road and leave them.
Let them rot.
And actually, if conditions permitted, we would do that. But I mean, if there's a house within a quarter mile or so, I'd probably it's not going to happen. Because. But if we're in, there's areas like out by Bong on Highway BB or B and that, sure, just pull them off to the fence line and let nature take its course.
Right. Any questions for Gary on anything?
Just a question on the proposed reconstruction on County S between Green Bay Road and H. That includes at least passing over one rail line, doesn't it?
Yes, there's currently a railroad overpass bridge on the CP railroad. We will leave that bridge in place. We will build a twin one next to that. And then at the UP Railroad, that's an at-grade crossing, and that would continue to be an at-grade crossing.
Okay. So that's where big expense comes in, is for that construction over CP.
It's a very large expense for a couple of reasons. One, of course, building a bridge is not inexpensive. It's not as expensive as you would think, but there's a considerable amount of fill that needs to be hauled in for the approaches.
Okay.
And it all has to be trucked in. So there's no like available fill on the project site itself to do that. So it tends to get very expensive.
And in your opening remarks, the first date you mentioned was about the proposed reconstruction of the bridge, County E, just west of Green Bay Road.
Mm-hmm.
What is the proposed timeline on that?
It's summer of 2017, next summer.
Thank you.
All right, well, thank you, Gary.
Mm-hmm.
And we will move on to Matthew Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dan hit on a couple high points about the Emerald Ash Borer tree removal. But to summarize, as far as the project goes, the contractor did complete the ash tree removal and cut down almost a little shy of 4,000 ash trees. So 3,998 trees were removed from the three separate parks. Good news was Pets was able to reopen this last Saturday, and it was just jam-packed full of people. So everyone was really in a good mood to get back out in the park, and they've been coming back ever since. Even today when we were there, abundance of walkers and park users. We still have mulch piles that still needed to be taken care of and grinded within the three parks. Pets only has one pile remaining. They'll move to Brightondale Golf Course in order to try to remove all those piles and logs as well from the golf course. This was a primary. In total, as part of Pets Park, they removed about 2,700 ash trees from that park. Fox River is still closed just because of the abundance of log piles throughout the park, so we have to wait until those are removed until we can reopen that park. But we had a little bit over 1,000 trees removed from Fox River. And then with Brightondale Golf Course, they were able to remove 255 ash trees, but since the weather conditions, as you know, weren't really feasible for us to be on the golf course with heavy equipment, we still do have 260 trees remaining that will have to be removed with that same contractor. He'll be coming back when the ground freezes again later on in 2016. So we'll have to plan that out accordingly, but they were able to get what they could without doing extensive damage to the golf course. So as Dan mentioned, cleanup efforts, the same goes for us on our side of things. And it's looking substantially better than when it initially started, especially at Fox River and Pets. So our staff's been just phenomenal. They've been, as a priority, trying to remove all the debris. But when these ash trees, since they're completely dead, when they hit the ground, they explode. So whatever the contractor is able to remove, they did. But we're left with the rest of the mess. And then we'll be working on stump removal after we get all the debris off the ground. So moving on to the Kemper storm damage, which was on December 28th, what happened and is still there. We wanted to make sure that we didn't have any more northeastern winds, and we'll be working on cleanup shortly for that effort. But we did meet with Bear Green specialists, and they did develop short and long-term plans, and it'll cost approximately $30,000 for the first phase of that project. For the Petrifying Springs Park Veterans Memorial, John received an additional letter from Congressman Paul Ryan's office, and there's two remaining things that need to be done in order to move this cannon forward into our park. First, the local American Legion Post 21 needs to sign the appropriate documentation for the shipment of the ceremonial rifles, and now it was brought to our attention recently that we need to adopt a resolution with the placement of an Army asset on public-owned land through the county board. So those are two things that we'll be moving forward on. And then finally, good news as far as building demolition at Pets with the Bugman over there. We have a scheduled time and date. So it's this coming Saturday, so bring your s'mores. And they'll be out there over at Pets. So they had to delay it a little bit. I was hoping to get that done this previous month, but as far as their scheduling, they finally have it for this coming Saturday. And along with that, we're going to be, as John said, doing maple syrup pikes on at Pets that Saturday, and we also have a run walk over at KD Park. So it'll be a busy weekend for the parks. And that is all I have.
Who's doing a run walk?
It's through the Kenosha Running Company. Brian Thomas puts on events through our park system. So he's hoping for, you know, at least, I would say, 100 people to be part of this event. It's very popular with KD Park people coming back there with all the trails.
A little soft out there today.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. They came in last year, all muddy.
Oh, you would.
Yeah, they love that.
It's a fun run.
How many times I've wiped the dog out there to get him back in the truck? More often than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're providing a hose for the runners outside.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Yeah, they run it, stage it right in the shop there.
So oh, they do?
Yeah, we have washrooms right there.
You started there?
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
What time is it scheduled to go for the demo on Saturday?
They're going to assemble at noon, but it's going to be an all-day event that they start it on fire, then they put it out, and then they keep on going around and around. Last time they did a controlled burn, I think it went from like noon till 6 p.m. approximately, so it's for training for all their new firefighters.
Any questions for Matt? All right, thank you, guys. And I'll move on to Ray over there. Brookside.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Following up to last month's meeting, we had gotten the bids in and started value engineering, and we were close, but we were able, through quite a bit of creative, the term is value engineering, got the numbers down so they're within budget now without sacrificing any of the core features of the project. The parking lot improvement on the east side of the existing building is the only feature that appears uncertain at this point. We will continue value engineering activities throughout the construction process. Is to quote Camozzi, kind of, we're just getting started on this. We did stuff beforehand in still the design phase, I'll call it, or pre-construction phase anyways. But as we go through the construction process, we're still going to be looking to nip and tuck and cut and script where we can without affecting the quality of the actual project. So that hopefully by the end of the project we'll amass enough funds to still do every single feature that we planned on doing it from the beginning. We're hoping to have final approvals and permits from the city necessary to start work in early April. The conditional use permit that we got approval for last fall, there were like 8 items that we needed to follow up with the city on. Those 8 items have been resubmitted formally to the city, I think last Thursday or Friday, and then we'll work with them. Hopefully, we tried to get them to pre-approve everything before we resubmitted it, but it was difficult to get some communication we needed with some of the city departments. So some of the stuff we ended up resubmitting without having formal feedback from them, not from a lack of attempt on our part. Also, another thing we're going to need to do is we're working closely with We Energies already to coordinate the relocation of a gas main, because that'll be the first step in the site process. We met with We Energies last week, Monday, to go over the game plan for that. We can't actually do that until the city does their thing, but we're kind of parallel pathing those two things so that when the city gets, actually there's 3 things, the actual permit applications have all been put in, the conditional use permit, addendums, those 8 things are being worked on, and We Energies getting them to develop a game plan and get us in the schedule to move this gas main. All 3 of those things are in place. So we're still hoping that we're going to be able to get everything settled out so we can start early April, because if the weather continues kind of in the course that it is, we definitely, I mean, a frost is out of the ground, so we definitely should be able to do that if we can get up these things to fall into place. That's pretty much the update on where Brookside's at. Within the department, we continue to work on a number of supervisory and management development initiatives. These are all designed to improve the operations of all public work divisions. We're also exploring the possibility of jointly working with Brookside on some lean process improvement training. Most of you are probably familiar from working in private sector or manufacturing settings. We're really looking at seriously implementing some of those concepts here in our departments. We went to a training last October. I took about four guys up to Madison to get them exposed to this stuff. And Brookside actually had some training in it about 3 or 4 years ago. And the person that they had trained as their trainer had left. So she wants to resurrect it because they had real good luck with it. So we're exploring our options and how to get some of that in place this year as well. And the last thing I was going to update on was the gas situation that everybody read about in the paper and probably got emails on it as well. Without getting into all the gory details, I'll hit the high points. The bottom line is we had tested that day. You know, there's always, when one of these events happens, there's always all kinds of misinformation floating around. And so there was information that our tanks were leaking, because we've got an underground diesel storage tank for the generator that we're going to replace, as well as gasoline tanks for the squads refuel right there. And so everybody, not everybody, certain folks had assumed that that's what the problem was. And we had just had the leak detection monitoring system recertified in January, so we felt pretty good. We still had Pat, the fleet manager for joint services, run another test on everything that afternoon, right after this happened. That all came back clean. But to be triple sure, we actually brought the vendor in that supports that leak monitoring system and had them do a complete pressurized test of the tanks, where they basically pressurize each of the tanks and then read over X amount of time, there can be such a drop in pressure. And that took from about 4:30 till about midnight that night. Everything checked out perfect. There was no leaks at all. That said, what the fire department had did, there's a hundred and, or the sewer line that this was is on the west side of the safety building. It services those few historical buildings that are on the west side of the safety building there. It was constructed in 1912. They don't know at this point what the source of the vapors were, but they were convinced or certain that it was just vapors. There were no liquids in there. But it was at a really high level. And so the fire department just started flushing that to create enough air movement in that sewer pipe to disperse these vapors. They never did. At this point, I just got a note this morning, they didn't figure out what they were or where the source was, but they've got the levels to drop from. They were at 30% LEL is the unit of measurement, which has to do with an explosive level, which 30% is really high. That's highly explosive. They had them down two of the lines, two manholes that they checked, there was three that they monitored, were down to zero, and one was at just under 10%. So they were getting it flushed out, but they still haven't figured out what exactly the cause was, where it was coming from. So the good news was all our stuff was good. The building did almost get to the point of they had actually sent home all the non-essential personnel. This started about 1:30 in the afternoon, probably about 3:30 they sent non-essential personnel home. And they had a plan in place to evacuate the building, inmates and everything. But that number, none of that came to pass. But everything was put in place for that to occur if it needed to. So the good news, like I say, is none of our stuff is leaking. I'd still feel better if the water utility figures out exactly what the source of that is. We gave them the name of an engineering firm that could help them with that. I'm hoping that they do that, and they don't just say, well, we cleared it up and it's all good, and then mysteriously it's going to happen 3 weeks from now again. So I'm hoping that they do that. We'll see. That's pretty much it.
Thank you, Ray. Anything else from anyone here?
Just a question. Was that a sewer issue or a sanitary sewer?
Sanitary sewer. Yeah, it was not a storm sewer. I believe, yeah, that is correct. And there was no connection between that line and any of our properties. So it was kind of an isolated thing. But I believe it was sanitary sewer, not storm sewer.
And it's old enough that it's rectangular.
Yeah, it's still rough. It's actually not a round pipe. It's a clay or porcelain square pipe.
Never seen that.
Yeah.
Big shot.
just makes you wonder if they're doing it, didn't have the potential to actually back up into...
The buildings next door, that's where they first smelled it, was in those buildings.
Because if you don't have that P-trap filled with water...
It'll come right back up.
Our buildings don't hook to it at all.
No, so we never had the smell in our buildings.
Or anything else in the area that was along that ladder. All right, thank you.